This is We Digress, with your hosts, Jeffrey Clues and Andrew Palmer. Today is Monday, February 2008.
The FBI peeps, the EU bans cars, and our top story, Bush proposes a $3.1 trillion budget.
That's trillion with a T.
That is trillion with a T, and the Democrats are not happy about this.
Really?
It is a shock. They said it's a continuation of Bush's failed policies. And I guess it is.
I guess my first question is, where is $3.1 trillion coming from?
They're going to be cutting, of course, Medicare and Medicaid.
Okay.
Is where the major cuts are going to come from.
Fair enough.
I think that's the only stuff they're cutting, actually.
And they're going to pull $3.1 trillion out of that, or?
Well, the budget is $3.1 trillion.
Yeah.
It's not an additional $3.1 trillion.
Oh, no, but that is quite a big increase in budget.
It is. It's the biggest one ever, and mainly it's the budget is so big to pay for, obviously, our foreign policy,
right,
and to beef up the military, which I don't have a problem with.
No.
Do have to wonder whether or not $3.1 trillion is a bit over the top. But
did you catch how much of an increase that was in either dollar or percent?
I did not. I don't have the information in front of me.
That would have been something
good. We should have printed that off.
Yeah.
Thinking back, I don't know a lot of the details. All I know is it is a big story.
Now, I just talk about budgets in general,
mm-hmm,
and cutting Medicare and Medicaid. I mean, I know we both kind of have mixed feelings about Medicare, Medicaid, things
right,
like that. But would there have been better things to cut?
I think if we had gone through all the programs that we have, we could certainly find things we don't need that don't work, or things that need to be tweaked a little bit, or definitely money-saving areas.
Yes.
Obviously, I've never gone through the entire budget.
No?
I would be interested to do that at one point, but I'm not sure. I think Medicare and Medicaid almost seems like he's cutting that just to sort of give the finger to the Democrats.
Yeah, that is definitely one of their rallying cries, is especially these days, is health care.
Right, I think it was Hillary Clinton said, you know, that's a core belief of the Democrats, is that you need to have universal health care. And so cutting the only health care programs we do have, it does seem a little odd. Though I guess where else can they cut it from? Anything they cut, they're going to be, you know, hurt with.
Right. Well, I remember listening to, I believe it was Larry Elder, who has a much more interesting radio show than we do, and he issued an interesting challenge. He said, you know, go to any Democrat that you know, and they'll tell you that we need to, you know, increase spending,
mm-hmm,
and they don't want to raise taxes.
Yep.
And you ask them what they could cut,
mm-hmm,
other than the military, to give us more money, and they will be flummoxed.
Right. But now, of course, part of the reason this budget is so large and that we're going to have a bigger debt is because included within it is the tax cuts becoming permanent, which is something obviously the Republicans very much want, but again, it's something that the Democrats are vehemently against.
Yeah, I don't know why the Democrats feel that giving me back some of my money really isn't the greatest idea.
You know, I agree on this that point, but I do see the point of view. Never before in our history have we cut taxes while funding a war. I think, rather than get into such a huge debt, and I believe me, I want to pay as little taxes as possible, but I also don't want to have a several trillion dollar debt.
Right.
And since we had gone from a surplus to so big, I don't know if tax cuts are the right thing right now.
Well, I do understand the idea and the logic behind it, you know, using tax cuts as an economic stimulus.
Correct.
I mean, economically, it does make sense.
Well, I think it should be a zero budget. Every amount of dollar that goes out should then come in through the taxes, but not a dollar more, not a dollar less.
Right.
I don't think we should be, in this case, since we do have such a debt, I don't think it would be a bad idea to make sure we have the taxes that pay for it. And if we don't have the taxes, then we have to cut the spending. And as you said, you know, ask people where we can cut the spending, and no one's going to come up with anything.
Right. I mean, I'm sure you and I could think of a few things, but I don't think we'd be rubbing anyone the right way by saying them.
And you do have to, you know, I do support the Iraqi war.
And I
believe we need to stay in there.
Yes.
But the amount of money we are spending it in there, you have to wonder. You know, the Barack Obama has the thing where he says, you know, we could fix every school, every road, all that, which I think is an overstatement, but it is a lot of money that could either be staying in our pockets or going towards other things.
Yes, and I definitely do think that while I know that you aren't, and I also am not a proponent of a lot of government spending on different projects and different organizations. There are certain things that I think that we could definitely put more money to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while I don't think that we need to throw more money at education, I don't think that...
Or what we just do is privatize more things also.
Yes, absolutely.
Which I think would be the best option, at least in the long run.
Well, so I guess overall, Bush definitely shot high with this one. He definitely
yeah.
aimed very high. And
luckily, it wasn't Cheney doing the shooting.
I think
that joke never gets old.
You've got any Craig jokes to do as well? Something about men's rooms?
Moving on.
We actually are moving on to our interesting headline of the week. And this is actually taken from the BBC. And I'll just read the beginning of this and kind of go through some statistics. Britons are losing their grip on reality. According to a poll out Monday, which showed that nearly a quarter think that Winston Churchill was a myth. Winston Churchill was a myth, while the majority reckon that Sherlock Holmes was real. Apparently,
This is absurd.
47% thought that Richard the Lionheart was a myth. 23% thought that Churchill was made up.
How could, and they don't give the ages here, but how can you truly believe that Winston Churchill was made up?
Well, I mean, some of the other people on here, 23% also thought that Florence Nightingale wasn't real.
I can see that more so, though. I can see that being just, you know, a story, you know, like lumping together other people. But to believe Winston Churchill wasn't real, I can see maybe even 0.1% of the crazy people believing that, but 23%.
Well, also, Mahatma Gandhi and the Duke of Wellington were in the top 10 of people that were thought to be myths.
Did they give the statistics on those, though?
No, they don't, but they were in the top 10.
They were in the top 10.
And 58% thought that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes existed, and 33% of someone who I don't recognize his character, but W. John's fictional pilot and adventure, Biggles. Now, this was a survey done by UK TV Gold, and you know
a little bit better than you. UK TV Silver, but not quite the level of Platinum.
I can't afford the Platinum package.
I certainly couldn't either.
It's quite the monthly fee. But you know, this actually reminds me of anyone out there who knows more about this than I do, but I remember hearing studies and hearing surveys about people who, after the Lord of the Rings movies came out, who truly thought that the battles for Middle-earth actually were part of world history. That at some point in world history, I'm guessing sometime before Columbus, you know, I guess maybe during the Dark Ages, that Gandalf the Grey and Frodo fought this orc army. And
if we talk about believing crazy things, is believing that kind of stuff any different than even, say, you know, and I'm going to get a hate mail for this, believing the Bible is true? Is the story of Middle Earth really that much more unbelievable than the world being flooded, than Adam and Eve and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I think at least one of the biggest differences, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
is that, and anyone who knows better than I do, please let me know, but when Tolkien wrote the Lord of the Rings trilogy and
mm-hmm.
subsequent books, he wrote them as fiction.
The Bible was essentially written as fiction, though, also, if you want to actually look at it as history.
But there are the percentage of people who read the Bible
mm-hmm.
and portray it as either an accurate historical depiction or even an accurate historical fiction,
mm-hmm.
and the number of people who read Lord of the Rings and portray that as some sort of accurate historical fiction, I think the disparity is quite big there.
I don't agree with you on that, actually. I think it's just simply people willing to believe anything. And I think, to me, the Bible is more about morals than values.
Right.
And I think most people who are religious take it that way. I don't think there's still a lot of people who do believe that all that stuff actually did happen.
No, I think also one of the big things that kind of separates the Bible from Lord of the Rings is that I've not read the Bible in a long time, but I don't remember there being giant war-fighting trees or
yeah, but there was a burning bush that talked to you.
Well,
and that is a fighting tree that much different than a burning bush?
Well, I think the burning bush may have been something symbolic.
But yes, I agree, but there are people who do not take it that way, that believe that all happened. We're talking about crazy people believing crazy things.
Oh, absolutely.
And if you even, let's take a look at Scientology. I'm often a defender of Scientology because I don't see it as being any stranger than any other religion. But you know, the stuff that those people believe is also crazy.
Yeah, no, I do definitely agree. I think it's also the reasons for believing it. I think
mm-hmm.
someone who believes the Bible because they feel that it is a good moral code to live by is different from someone who believes Lord of the Rings because they just have a bad grasp of history.
Not necessarily true. The people who believe that, they may never have read the books, don't know anything about it. It's simply hearing something and then believing it without any evidence to the contrary.
I think it requires a lower level of intelligence to believe that orcs and kings and gods and things
like that. Well, you haven't responded to my Scientology.
What?
Do you believe that Scientology, believing that, is any different than believing religion? Any other religion, Catholicism or
I consider Scientology to be more of a cult than a religion. And I know that in America it is accepted as a religion, but internationally it is accepted more as a cult.
But why is it so much different than any other religion?
I would say the fairly well-known fact that L. Ron Hubbard created it on a bet.
That's actually not true, I've read.
Really?
Yes, and if anybody knows, actually send that to us. I had heard that several times, and I've looked it up, and there's no actual evidence to suggest that is true.
Well,
I know that's something that's been told a lot of times, but I haven't been able to prove it either way. So if you do know, send it to wedigress@gmail.com if you have any proof one way or the other. But moving on, we're on to our genius of the day / week. And today we have a story about a nurse who steals 244 body parts.
That is a lot of body parts.
Yes, this came from the Associated Press, and it says, a man accused of scheming to plunder body parts, bodies for parts used in thousands of tissue transplants in the U.S. and Canada is poised to plead guilty, and authorities and victims' relatives say his testimony could roil the billion-dollar industry. So I'm guessing this is about the black market.
The black market of body parts and organs and things like that.
There's a lot of money to be made here. You can sell them as much as $7,000 a piece.
Does it say specifically what you could sell it for? Like which body parts you could sell
it? It doesn't get the specific body parts. But if you're working in a morgue or you work here something like that, I can see that being actually tempting.
Yeah.
I guess a morgue, it's too late at that point.
Right. But in the ICU,
that's a lot of money. I almost don't even know where to go with this one.
Yeah, it's definitely especially in such a number.
Yeah.
And it definitely is interesting that I guess it does shine light on it being kind of an unspoken industry.
And this was Michael Mastromarino.
Okay, Mastromarino.
He's our genius of the week.
Okay.
I guess in a way, it was pretty smart. It was awful and stupid, but...
I guess this does bring up a different moral debate as to whether I should be able to sell one of my kidneys.
Mm-hmm. I think you should have that right.
But
I think someone of course it's always the correct state of mind. But if you needed money and you had a kidney to give, I suppose whose right is it to say you shouldn't be allowed to do that?
I
suppose the worry is then obviously it's going to the highest bidder and it's not going to be on a need basis.
But isn't that how all other markets work? And doesn't that, I mean...
It is, but I think maybe when we're talking about health and life, it should be everybody is on the same level, regardless of how much money you have.
But at least my feeling is if you knew you could get, at minimum, let's say, $2,000 for your kidney,
mm-hmm.
there's a certain number of people who are donating kidneys right now.
Yes.
If you add a monetary incentive there,
mm-hmm.
even if it is only for the highest bidder, that still is more people who are going to be donating kidneys.
Right, but then I think you'd have some people who would then, who would otherwise donate it for free, would demand money for it. And if they don't get money, they wouldn't donate it. I think so. I don't think we'd actually see a jump of people necessarily donating.
Well, I do think there is that charitable aspect. I think people do still donate money without getting anything in return.
Yes, they do, and that is good. But I think you're saying there would be a huge jump in that a lot of people who would otherwise not donate would.
I think
you would see an equal portion of people who would normally have donated for free who would then demand money for it.
But I think you would, I think you would also find a jump in people who are actually in charitable organizations raising money to buy organs for people.
Yes.
Where people who are, at the bottom of transplant.
What, are we going to have essentially a market economy for body parts where people can be bidding on them? Like, are we going to have this on eBay at some point?
Well,
neither of us like the slippery slope argument, but I think it is a slippery slope. The question is, where is it going to go next?
I think if it's well-regulated, I think, if it's not just, you bring a kidney down to the local donation bank and they hand you $5,000, but the kind of thing where, Kidney has to still be in body for the transaction to take place. Because,
but if there's, you'd have to have it very well regulated, because otherwise you'll have problems with people who need money, who literally will kill someone to take their body organs.
But if you, like, right now, let's say I was having kidney problems and you happened to be a donor for me. The majority of
hospitals... So this is fiction right now.
Yeah, this is fiction.
Okay.
But the majority of hospitals would not allow you to specify that your kidney would go to me.
That is true.
And I honestly think that is a problem.
But that's different than paying money.
Oh, no, but I mean...
Being able to say to someone that, you know, you are my friend, I will give you my body parts.
Oh, absolutely, but I think if
I think it's different than me saying, well, I'll give it to you for $20,000. I think it's something I either want to give it to you or I don't.
But I think people are also, you know, people want to be doctors, they want to help people, but people also would rather be doctors if they're going to make a lot of money off of it. And I think, you know, we get more doctors that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you set up a system where you can only donate, you can't donate kidneys that aren't in the body. You know, basically, if I want to sell my kidney, I put up the kidney for bid, and once the transaction is made, I go in. It's taken from my body and given to the person where, you know, basically there is no question that it's my kidney.
Correct.
Then I don't see, you know, because that eliminates the crime aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it being kind of strange.
It's definitely something that should be looked into and has some consideration. But we're going to take a break right now and be back with Hollywood News.
Hollywood News, absolutely. Yeah, we'll be taking a break. And we're back. We're going to start off today, or this segment, not today, because a previous segment to this. We're going to start off this segment with our movie recommendations.
And what are we recommending today?
We are actually recommending Michael Clayton.
I thought we were doing that a couple days ago.
We were supposed to.
And
I kind of threw
a last-minute change.
Last-minute change, but we're actually going to be talking about Michael Clayton this time. And I know we saw it together. And in the most manly, heterosexual way possible.
Yes.
And it's not really a date movie.
It's not really. But
and you know, I think with the fact that we have been discussing George Clooney a lot lately,
it's a very good movie.
It definitely is. And some of the acting is incredible.
Tilda Swinton is one of my favorites, and it's great to see her finally getting some recognition for her great work.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that she's definitely one of the, I guess, powerhouses of female acting out there.
Yeah, she definitely
is. And I think that, you know, over the next few years, we will definitely be seeing her taking a lot of the big roles and almost becoming like a poor man's Meryl Streep.
Oh, could be. But Michael, because the movie is actually interesting. I left the movie not knowing how I actually felt about it.
I thought
there were moments of genius in it, and then there were moments of just...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were part. I mean, the tempo of it was not the tempo. Is that the right word for it?
The pacing.
Not tempo. Tempo is music.
Yes.
But the pacing of it did kind of change a little bit.
I think the last 5 minutes. It may be my favorite ending of any movie I saw this year. And,
absolutely.
I saw some good endings, but just the scene with Clooney and to wrap it up and Swinton. I don't want to give anything away. But it was worth the price of admission for me. It's kind of a movie that really just kind of grows on you.
Yeah, the more I've thought about it, the more I've really enjoyed the movie, and I definitely would see it again. You know, I remember walking out of there thinking, you know, this may not be the kind of thing that I'd even, you know, tune into on television.
Yeah.
But I definitely would, you know, if it's still playing around here, I'd definitely be interested in
seeing
it again.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, when you go see it, don't believe the hype. It's not the movie you're being told it is.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a very simple movie. It's a very slow movie. There's, you know, they talk about it because he's a fixer of a firm, but it's not really about that. I was expecting things, you know, corporations hiding stuff, and he had to go in and he had to fix it and play in the press, all kinds of stuff. It's not about that. It's very much a character piece. And I do not remember the guy's name that played the older lawyer. He was nominated for an Academy Award.
Yeah, this would also be a good thing for us.
Yeah, we need to do better planning for these type thing.
But, No, it was definitely a very good character piece. I think some of the writing was very well done. It was very extremely well directed.
It was definitely.
It was one of the just visually more interesting pieces that I've seen recently.
Yep.
I mean, there was nothing really revolutionary about it, but it definitely did.
It was sort of a throwback movie. It actually, we recommended All the President's Men before. This is a movie that deals with less, you know, big topics, but it's very similar to All the President's Men, and with a central mystery, and dealing with the characters and how they deal with their mystery as they find it out. And
you know, it's one of those films where I was watching it, not really sure how I felt about any of the characters until the very end. And even now, looking back on it, I'm not, you know, did I like Michael Clayton? Did I think he was a good human being? Would I want to sit down and have a beer with him? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's a movie I'm definitely going to want to see again on DVD.
Absolutely.
Or high def DVD or Blu-ray.
Right, or Blu-ray. Any one of those.
Definitely, we need to discuss one time. The Blu-ray HD battle, though, I think it's pretty much ended.
It's pretty much ended. But you know, it would be interesting to even move on to like the PS3 Xbox battle.
Yes.
And you know, because the Blu-ray HD battle did work into that a little bit.
A little bit, definitely.
And it was kind of two sides of the same coin.
Definitely. Okay, so let's should we move on to the Hollywood Outsider?
Absolutely.
Okay, this is our news roundup for the day. Do we have write-ups on any of these, Andrew?
No, absolutely not.
Okay,
absolutely
well, then we're going to go by the headlines.
I did actually read some of these.
Okay,
I
good.
These.
Okay, the first one, Letterman apologizes to Hilton. If you remember the first time after she got out of jail, she went on to Letterman's show, and I don't know if you watched it or not.
I've seen the clips on YouTube.
And he was a little mean to her, I thought, and so she came back on to him a few days ago, and apparently he was once again a jerk.
Yeah, and you know, I guess I appreciate the fact that he is apologizing for being a bit of an ass to this. You know, regardless of what you think of Paris Hilton, she just got out of jail.
Right.
she obviously, you know, she. I don't remember her exact quote, but she said that, you know, she learned from it, and you know, she you know, she paid her debt to society.
Yep.
And she's going to try and move on from it. You know, she just wanted to leave it at that. And she was on the show. Didn't she have a movie coming out or
yeah,
a new fragrance or something
like
that?
Yeah, she was coming out the first time at least to for her new fragrance.
For her new fragrance, right. So it's not like there was nothing to talk about.
Right. And I think she made the comment where she said, you know, I don't want to talk about this anymore. And he said, oh, well, that's the difference between us because that's all I want to talk about. And, you know, it is a comedy show. And it could be expected. But again, we had talked about Britney Spears the other day.
Yeah.
And how it's sort of like back off her. You know, I don't think she's deserving of our love or admiration. I don't think she's done anything to earn it. But she's also not deserving of our complete scorn.
Yeah.
There's a German word for that.
How was it? Schadenfreude.
Yeah. And that's definitely what we seem to be getting from all these young Hollywood starlets. We just enjoy watching them crash and burn. First, we build them up for no reason, and then we tear them down.
Yeah. Paris Hilton was definitely one of those who was kind of famous for being famous.
Okay. And then Hayden speaks out on animal rights, for those of you who watch Heroes.
Yes, and
she had been arrested earlier for, or there's a warrant out for arrest in China, I believe, for doing a whale protest a couple weeks ago.
And I think this is actually related to that, and you know, I understand people have beliefs, but, and I don't want to come off crude here, but who cares about what Hayden Panettiere thinks about animal rights? I think
it's nice that she's taking a different topic than most people go for. She's not just speaking out against poverty or that kind of stuff. She there's something that, you know, in that case of the whale hunting, that she thought was bad, disgusting, and she didn't just speak out against it. She actually went on a boat and tried to stop it. You got to give her credit for that.
Yeah, she definitely has moxie, but this is just you know, the way that I've always dealt with celebrities is that, you know, they exist. With a show like Heroes, Hayden Panettiere exists to me from the moment that show starts to the moment that show ends.
Yep.
Past that, she is useless to me. I don't care what she believes in anything. And I've always felt that these kind of things, regardless of you know, how deeply believe them, do seem like a cry to say, I am a real person outside of my character.
It may be. But moving on to I think probably one of our favorite shows of all time.
Yeah, Arrested Development
is going to have a film.
Yeah, from what I read, and now once again I don't remember any actors' names.
Jason Bateman,
and the one who played George Michael.
Michael Cera.
I believe that they were both speaking about how it's. You know, it's not really set in stone yet, but there have been.
I know Michael Horowitz, the creator and writer, have been talking about for a while. And, you know, I don't know how I feel about it, because I thought the show was perfect. I think it's the best comedy ever. I think it certainly tops Seinfeld, Scrubs, any of those. I think it's genius.
It really is.
And it ended on such a great note that, you know, is it worth the risk to go back and revisit these characters and maybe not end with something that's quite as good as the rest?
Yeah, I mean, and I know that Arrested Development has kind of become, especially in, like, the college circuit, that kind, you know, that kind of kitschy comedy that all the kids who are, you know, interesting watch.
Yep.
And, you know, if you want to sound like you're something different, you mentioned how your favorite show is Arrested Development. But, and I know that they would love, you know, that the young community would love another Arrested Development.
And I have faith that I want one. You know, I have reservations, but I would pay good money to see him back.
But I guess my fear, and I think it also you touched on it as well, is just if it does happen, and if it does end up not being, there's no way it can live up to the expectations.
But you know what? What if it does? It could be the most amazing movie of all time. And that one microscopic chance that it could end up being something amazing, for me, is worth it.
Well, I look at it and like I take like the three cartoon, you know, Fox cartoon movies that came out recently.
Mm-hmm.
The Futurama one, the Futurama one, the Family Guy quote unquote movie,
mm-hmm.
and the Simpsons one.
Mm-hmm.
And
I thought the Simpsons was a fantastic movie.
I thought it was very good. That was definitely
Futurama for me. I know I'm the big Futurama fan here.
Yeah,
I've seen every episode, and the movie was good, and it was great to see the characters again. I didn't think it was quite as good to me as the Simpsons movie was. I thought the Simpsons captured the series better than the Futurama movie did.
Right.
But, you know, my Family Guy, I'm just sick of, so.
Yeah, but my fear with Arrested Development was that, you know, the Simpsons movie, it was a 2-hour episode of the Simpsons, but it wasn't in the same respect.
Yeah.
It definitely had things which
it was a much broader scope.
Whereas I would fear that Arrested Development would end up like, you know, the Stewie Griffin story, which would just be a 2-hour episode of Arrested Development, nothing new.
But our final story is No Country for Old Men cements itself as the leader with winning the Producers Guild Best Picture Award.
Now, I am ashamed to say that I have not seen this film yet.
I have not either.
I know my father's reading the book, and he said it's quite good, and everyone I've spoken to has seen the film, says that it's definitely a return to form for the Coen brothers.
Yeah, and Fargo, I think, is one of the all-time greats.
Yeah, and I definitely think after what was it, Lady Killers and Intolerable Cruelty,
yeah,
nice seeing them.
No, I didn't enjoy both of those for what
you
they
saw
were.
Lady Killers?
I did see the Lady Killers with Tom Hanks.
I didn't see that.
I would love to see the original at some point.
I saw Intolerable Cruelty, and I thought it was... at least for me, it seemed like an attempt to recreate a slapstick comedy from...
Well, that's what it was. I mean,
yeah.
It was an interesting experiment. I don't think it worked on all the levels, but you had two fantastic actors, George Clooney and,
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Catherine Zeta-Jones, who are both excellent, both very glamorous people.
Mm-hmm.
It was, again, those things that if it had worked, it would have been outstanding. It ended up just being, you know, an interesting, fun movie.
Right, and
but going from, you know, Fargo to that,
right.
I
think I would have enjoyed it a lot more if it wasn't a Coen Brothers film. I mean, they've brought us some of the best movies of the last, you know, 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and I'm really happy to see No Country for Old Men. Really,
it's taken, and definitely it's. I think it's the film to beat for Best Picture. But we have to move on.
Yeah, I think it is time for us to move on, and
we're going into listener feedback.
Okay, now we move into our listener feedback. If you recall, last episode we talked about celebrity endorsements,
mm-hmm.
of political candidates, and we got a good deal of messages in our mailbag here.
Well, I'd say the vast majority were not in favor of them.
No. No. Here, I'll start. I got this one from Dana in D.C. It says, Chuck Norris standing by Huckabee and looking like people actually care what he thinks is the crowning moment of the collapse of our political system.
Crowning moment.
Crowning moment.
Wow.
I think,
And who was that?
That was from Dana in D.C.
Dana in D.C.
A little bit harsh. I mean...
you know, I don't really care what he thinks, but to call it, you know, the death of civilization a little bit more.
A little bit soon, yeah.
Though I think Jane in New Mexico would agree with her, and she says, who cares who is endorsed by whom?
That's a good point.
You know...
short, simple, to the point. I don't.
I really don't either.
All right, now we've got Jack in Detroit who asks, if celebrity endorsements are so pointless, why do you keep endorsing McCain? Jack, if you may not have noticed, we're not celebrities.
and I don't think we're endorsing him so much as saying that he's our favorite candidate, which I guess is an endorsement. But you know...
let's put it... Anyone who is going to vote for us... We would prefer that you would vote for McCain instead.
And what we do here is we give our opinions. That's our point. If you don't care what our opinions are, if you don't find us entertaining, you don't listen to it. But in our opinion, John McCain is the best. That's different than someone like a... and we have nothing to gain from this position, keep in mind.
No.
Someone like a Frisk from Florida, you know, he has something to gain by throwing his support behind the eventual winner. You know, you question, is it politically motivated? It's not who they necessarily really believe, it's who's best for their career.
No, actually, I just want to quick aside here. We want you to keep listening, regardless of whether you care what we have to say or not. Please keep listening.
Okay, and then Chaz is a little wordy. He's from New Jersey.
Okay.
And he said, well, it isn't the only or most important factor in deciding who to vote for. Coming from someone I respect, it does make a difference. And then I guess I can't argue with that.
No.
You know, if, again, as we talked before, you know, if you agree with A and A agrees with B, therefore you agree with B.
Right.
And
right.
I can see that being, to some degree, how it is. And
well said, Chaz in New Jersey.
Okay. And
yep.
We're not really going to have a debate tonight so much as well, we did something exciting.
We did. We made a pie.
We did make a pie, and on top of that, we went and saw Barack Obama speak.
Oh, that too.
That
you see that.
You know, but let's first talk about the pie. The crust was perfect.
The crust was perfect. I thought it was a bit risky going with huckleberry. It is a difficult season to get huckleberries in. I don't even know where you got huckleberries, to be honest.
And you will never know. Maybe I bought them from a Barack Obama supporter.
Okay.
Well, it was an interesting rally. He was speaking in Hartford, Connecticut.
Yes, in
and
Hartford,
we
at
made
their civic center.
The trip down, we rented a private plane and flew to Forest, North Dakota, then to California, then back to New Mexico, and then landed in Connecticut.
Absolutely horrible pilot.
Yes, took us 3 days. But I thought it was interesting. It was exciting. The guy is a hell of a public speaker.
There was definitely quite a turnout.
I heard that somewhere estimated 15,000 people.
And that's, you know, and honestly, I didn't think that the population of Connecticut was much more than
15,000
people.
Now, it was exciting to be at rally. Now, we've seen other people speak. We've seen McCain speak before. But Barack Obama is known for his amazing public speech and his ability to, you know, lift you up with his words.
He's the black Bobby Kennedy.
And I think he really did demonstrate that. I think how he said it, though, was much more important than what he said, because he didn't really say anything.
At all.
It was all, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. But not how are we going to do it. You know, it was akin to someone just standing up and saying, we're going to have peace in the Middle East, and then everyone cheering and then walking down. Great sentiment. How are you going to do it?
Yeah, well, I guess, honestly, I'm not surprised that this is coming from any type of candidate, any kind of election season.
Mm-hmm.
This is quite, this is the status quo.
Well, and you know, the knock against Barack, yeah, I try, is that he's all style over substance, and that is what, you know, Clinton always says. And you
he
know,
didn't
I,
do much to prove that today.
I really do like Barack Obama. I had the pleasure of meeting him once, actually, before he was famous. When he was at the University of Chicago.
Really?
Yes.
Actually, is that a story that is short enough where you could retell the story, or?
Well, he actually, my sister went to University of Chicago. I certainly did not. I was too busy at Stanford.
Yes.
And he was a teacher there,
mm-hmm.
and he actually lived next door to my sister's dorm. And he would always bring his young kids to preschool that was hosted for the professors from the University of Chicago. And my mother had the pleasure of actually meeting him one time on Chicago Public Transportation.
That's right. They discussed the weather, didn't they?
Then they discussed the weather. She had no idea, and it was already after he had done his big speech on Geisel, but she had no idea who he was, and she thought he was just a very nice man.
Yeah,
and then and then she got to the bus, and my sister runs up and said, do you know who that was? That was Barack Obama. And this is actually, these are true stories.
Yeah, unlike most of them, these are true.
But so I'm predisposed to like Barack Obama. I think he's an intelligent man, a very intelligent man.
Absolutely.
I think he would actually do a great job as president. I'd rather see him over Clinton. He's my second choice after McCain.
Mm-hmm.
But hearing him speak, I couldn't help but think that Clinton was, in a way, right by saying, you know, yeah, sure, he's a great speaker, but what's he going
to
do for us?
And I know how hard it is for you to say that Clinton was right about something. Hey. I can see just
the pain,
in your eyes.
No, I like Hillary Clinton, actually. I don't want to see her as president.
No,
but
I don't
think she's a bad girl.
No, I don't think she's a bad person.
Not a naughty.
I really hope.
I had to make the Craig joke. You brought it up before, so I had to bring that back full circle.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But back to the rally. I mean, he certainly got the crowd on their feet.
Oh, absolutely. He definitely knows how to inspire a crowd.
He is, and you know, he is the heir, I suppose, now to the JFK mythology, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ted Kennedy, Sarah Kennedy introduced him. Carolyn Kennedy introduced Ted and John Larson, I don't know, some woman who was, I don't know,
dean of something possibly,
introduced Carolyn. John Larson introduced her. So it was basically just an hour of people introducing other people.
Yeah, it was just a daisy chain of, now let me present, and a lot of talk about the Kennedys.
A lot of talk about the Kennedys. He has certainly positioned himself as the next JFK, and whether that's a good thing or not, I have mixed feelings about JFK. I think he could have been an amazing president. I think he's looked at a little on the soft side because obviously he was killed so young.
Yes.
I wonder, had that not happened, would he still have been looked at as such an amazing president? And he certainly did some good stuff. He handled the Cold War brilliantly.
Yes, he did.
His portion of it, at least. But he had some mess-ups. You know, Bay of Pigs are returned to him, obviously. But he also, he had promised a lot of stuff, like Barack Obama, and he didn't follow through. He didn't get a chance to follow through. I don't know, been interested to see if he would have or not. But is that going to be with Barack? Is he going to be the same thing where he can get you on your feet, you want to hear him speak, you believe in him, but then, when it comes down to it, he doesn't have the ability to, put it all together?
I picture it kind of like, those trust falls you do in, team building exercises?
Yes, oh yeah.
It is, I picture Barack like this guy who is just standing behind you saying, you can trust me, I'm going to catch you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start falling backwards and you suddenly think to yourself, is this guy actually going
to
catch me?
Well, see, to me, it's actually good, but I think it's more that he's sitting behind you saying, if you do fall, if you decide to fall down, I would catch you very well.
Yeah.
And, I'm not saying fall and let's find out. I'm saying if you did, I would catch you well. it sort of seems like that. Like he's making promises to promise to do things.
Yeah, he definitely, and the amazing thing is he's making promises to do things that he's not really being clear about.
Right.
He's promising to, give everyone health care.
Mm-hmm.
To give everyone, senatorial level health care. But when it gets to how, it's just kind of...
And I'm sure, he does on his website have, where he writes out how he's going to do all this stuff, to a degree.
Yes.
And, being the professionals we are, we haven't looked at this.
No.
So I'm sure he does have some way of doing it, but it seems at least at the rallies, and, this was a rally, not a town hall meeting or anything like that, but there was nothing of any substance talked about.
No.
It was just simple, let's get people cheering. Make a joke about GOP standing for gas, oil, and petroleum.
Yeah.
A hilarious joke, And then anytime they mention how horrible the Bush administration was or how horrible the Republicans are, we're both Republicans, but we like Barack Obama. We can enjoy Democrats.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels a little odd to be sitting there and having people cheer about saying how evil you are.
Yeah, it definitely was. And Ted Kennedy did make the comment that we're all very lucky because a year from now, President Bush will not be on the ballot for re-election. And I don't know if he doesn't understand how the election process works, that you can only have two terms.
Right, yeah, to make it seem like it's a victory for him that he's not on the ballot. And, I can see... of course, a Democrat's going to bash Bush, just like, 8 years ago, a Republican had to bash... Clinton, and I actually agree with Barack Obama on this, that we do need to probably change that style of politics.
Yeah, he did make
and
very...
And why can't we all just be friends? And that's why I do like Barack Obama, because I think privately he is much more willing to cross the aisle. That's why I very much like McCain. He's willing
right.
to do that. Whereas someone like a Clinton, this is war, and they are the enemy. And Mitt Romney, they are the enemy. And
yeah,
I don't think that ever works.
I think we definitely have seen enough of partisan politics for the time being.
Mm-hmm. Has it already been 10 minutes?
Actually, it has been already 10 minutes. I mean, we can stop talking now if you got nothing else to say.
Do I have anything else? Do you have anything else to say?
Well, I just wanted to quickly touch on, what did you think of the people that were there?
It was an interesting group. There were actually a lot of young kids, and we
yeah.
brought a friend of ours who was in 8th grade, and he did seem to enjoy it.
Yeah, he did.
We wanted to get him involved in the political process. He's, I think I've talked him into McCain. We'll call him V, because I want to say his real name.
Yes.
And it was interesting watching him. He would go, at some points he really seemed to get into it, taking the pictures, hearing him speak, and another time he was just bored silly. And next to him was another group of very young kids, like it looks like 6 or 7 year olds. Behind us, there were probably 15 year olds.
Yeah, it was definitely
an interesting group.
Barack Obama, I'll give him credit. He definitely does seem to be, uniting a lot of previously.
He does, and it seems what I think is the reason there are a lot of kids there. I think is because the parents are excited about it and want to try to bring their kids into the politics. And said, this is a guy, look at this guy speak. This guy is amazing. This
yes.
guy can inspire you. And and I think that is a good thing. And as much as I love McCain, I've never felt the need to take someone to one of his town hall meetings to be inspired.
No, but I mean, I've made the comp before, and public speaking is only so much. I mean,
it
Tony Robbins is a fantastic public speaker, but I would not vote for him.
Right, but I think Barack Obama has demonstrated that he's more than just a public speaker. He is a very, very intelligent man.
Oh,
he's a scary intelligent man.
Yeah,
he
definitely is an extremely intelligent
man. And I would, the basis for me for voting for someone is not, with what they know, it's how they'll deal with the unknown. If they'll be able to take in the information and take in the advice from the experts and make the right decision for the unforeseeable offense and stuff like with 9/11, with you know, something like that happening, you know, who do we want to be having make the decision of what to do after that? And with Barack Obama, I have complete faith that he would handle the situation as well, that he would do what was needed, and that he would make the right decision ultimately.
Well, that is actually one of my fears, is that there's not much of a track record to base that off of.
There isn't, and I think that is to a degree, and that's obviously what Clinton fights him against.
She doesn't have much of a track record either.
She doesn't, which is something we should discuss at some point, her 35 years of experience, which is, you know, beyond absurd, which is one of the reasons, you know, I said I don't mind, I like her, but I also get annoyed by her.
Yes.
But do any of the candidates? I mean, when it comes to the unforeseen, Clinton doesn't have the experience. Barack Obama doesn't have the experience. Mitt Romney, he doesn't have any experience with a major national catastrophe or how he would handle that kind of stuff. And even Senator McCain, to a degree, doesn't have experience because we're talking about stuff that we don't know what's going to happen.
Oh, no, but I think I honestly am one of the people who believes that, you know, military service does prepare you for that kind of
Certainly
thing.
Certainly it does. McCain is definitely a war hero. He's definitely an incredibly intelligent man. And I think he would probably make it best. But that's actually what I think is so great about this election right now, is like last time it was between who do you think would be the least worst.
Yeah.
And now we're debating who would do
who's going to be the best.
Yeah, which one is truly going to be the best, and it's tough to say, you know, he's going to be the best because of all these things, but he can also, you know, Barack could also be the best because of these things. And to be in a situation where we have that choice, and even with Clinton, I don't want to see her in the White House, but I don't think she would be a bad president. I don't think Mitt Romney would be a bad president.
No, I honestly don't think that there's anyone still in the running who I really think would be a bad president.
My only one, and I love the guy, Mike Huckabee, I think would, I think, in, you know, he would make a great vice president, and I think it'd be interesting to see after, you know, 8 years in the White House. I think he'd be a great president right now. I don't think he's ready for it. I don't think he has, I don't think he's got necessarily, I don't want to say the intellect, but he doesn't have the intellectual curiosity that I think you see in, like, Clinton and Obama, and he doesn't have the foreign policy experience that you have in McCain.
And I honestly don't think that he, sometimes it feels like he's not taking it seriously.
You know, I don't remember, I think it was Mitt Romney who made the joke that he wasn't sure if he was running for vice president at this point or if he was running for a late night job. And
he definitely is a very intelligent, amusing man.
He is.
But, you know, I
talk about a guy that you'd want to have a beer with. I think he certainly is that one. But I don't think, you know, if it came down to, you know, making the tough call, he's not the guy I would want to have in the room.
No.
I wouldn't mind him giving advice in the room.
No, I
but I wouldn't want
to make
him that call. It's any of the other ones, I think, could do it. If you're wondering how I rate them, it's McCain, Obama, Clinton, Romney.
I was wondering.
Yeah, were you?
I actually would swap Romney and Clinton.
Would you?
Yeah, there's just something about the woman. It's nothing substantial, but there's just something about the
woman. I think it would be bad for the country overall because of just the type of politics it would bring back to the table, and but it's actually the Republicans' fault. It's not her fault. It's the Republicans' fault. The Republicans cannot let go of the Clintons and have just unnatural hatred for them. And I think that's why it's not good to have her in the White House. But I think, would she be a good president? I think she would. I think she's a smart woman.
Absolutely, but I don't think now is the time for her.
Now is that's right.
I'd be interested to see how well she does 4 years from now.
Or 8 years from now.
8 years.
I would have liked her to see maybe taking even a role in, you know, waiting to see get a Democrat take the office and having even a foreign policy role.
Absolutely.
In that, getting out just from being a senator and doing some, you know, get some more of the experience she's always talking about.
And honestly, just a quick note before we stop here, I just think it would be strange to look back into the history of her and see Bush Clinton.
That might
confuse.
Though, she made the good joke that it took one Clinton to clean up after the first Bush, is going to take a second clean up after the last Bush. It was clever.
Then who's going to clean up after the second Clinton?
I think the argument there is that the Clintons didn't need cleaning up.
Didn't they?
We can spend hours arguing about the Clintons, and we do.
We do.
Unfortunately. What I like about this is actually how our talks normally go.
Yeah. But I think that's enough.
I think we're going to have to call the day
if
there.
If there's anyone who either watched the rally on TV or is actually at the Hartford, Connecticut rally, and maybe...
Well, let's just pose a question, because we did talk about McCain and we talked about Romney that way. How do you think Barack Obama would be as a president? Do you think he has the experience? Do you think it is just all talk? Have you seen him speak, and what's your opinion of it? Make sure anything you have, send it to us.
We digress, WEDIGRESS @gmail.com.
And send your thoughts, and, if we get something we like, we'll read it online.
Yeah.
Well, we'll read it, and we'll read it on the show.
Or if we only get, you know, six pieces, we'll read those, because that's all we'll have.
All
right, I think it's about time we move on. Moving on to our Why We Hate People segment. This is actually a story taken...
We're not really talking about a lot of different stuff here today, are we?
No. This is taken from a piece in the LA Times, and written by Andrew Malcolm, and I'm just going to pull a little piece out of it. Talking about a incident in Bridgeton, Missouri? Montana?
Oh, this is sad.
This is sad.
I'm guessing...
Just not St. Louis. It must be Missouri.
Yes.
Okay.
It must be.
Wow. Well, I have my degree in postal codes. Really, it's not paying off right now.
No.
Senator Henry Clinton...
Henry Clinton? Where are you going with this?
Senator Hillary Clinton addressed a town hall meeting there and was taking questions from the audience. One elderly woman rose and was asking the Democratic candidate about a rumored economic union among the United States, Canada, and Mexico that is widely discussed, feared, and abhorred among conspiracy fanciers. The woman said the president planned to implement the secret agreement in 2010. I was actually thinking about 29, but 2010
works. Yeah.
The woman called the president Bush the bastard. Then the Democratic crowd immediately roared to its approval. No surprise there. Senator Clinton, and this is where it gets bad, nodded her head slightly and smiled. Then she proceeded to answer the question, saying there's not a lot of truth to it. Our colleagues over here at the swamp, and I'm guessing that's Andrew Malcolm's words, but they're not really our colleagues. Andrew Malcolm's colleagues over there at the swamp have posted Glenn Thrush's detail about the incident, which you can really read.
Yeah, I don't think we need that right now.
But, to quickly jump ahead, because I know we were going to talk about it.
McCain, of course. The Mitch comment.
Yes, Andrew Malcolm wrote, "It'll be interesting to see if Clinton's silent assent to that crude comment arouses as much criticism and controversy as last year when a Republican woman in South Carolina asked Senator John McCain about Clinton calling her the bitch." I'm not expecting any kind of apology to come from Clinton.
No, I don't think we should expect one, and did McCain eventually give one?
He did say that he respected the New York senator.
Okay, but that's not really an apology.
I
can call you an asshole and say I respect you. I still called you that.
Yes, you did. Well, the thing is, the thing we're talking about, this is why I think it's such a gray area, is that Clinton and McCain didn't call
out of respect, at least if I'm out with people and one of them badmouths someone who's not there, I think as a friend you say, come on, you know, and even if it's not a friend, you don't talk about people that way. I think there is respect. Bush is the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Even if you hate him.
Like it or not.
You don't call him that, and if you do call him that, if you don't get to do it as a senator. You have to respect him as a senator, and you have to say, pull it back.
Yeah, and I think one of the amazing things is I think this is actually really indicative of the Democratic Party, and
politics in general.
The politics in general, but I think especially over the last 8 years, we've seen this a lot coming out of the Democrats with very, very hateful things, which I have not really heard.
If you remember back to the Clintons being in office, it was just as bad.
I don't think that anything was said about Clinton that is comparable to Bush being called the new Hitler.
But that is from such a small amount of people. And yes, there are people who attack Clinton at everything, call him the worst names possible. And I think it is the same. I think it's just as bad. I don't think there's difference. I think the Republicans are just as bad at it as the Democrats are.
Maybe it's just the current climate, but from a party that preaches tolerance and understanding and acceptance of people, that preaches that is so outspoken against bigotry and racism and hate in all shapes and sizes, I think it especially comes back bad off of them.
It may, because it makes them hypocrites. But I think to say that they do it more than the Republicans, I don't agree with that.
Well, that's where you'd be wrong. But back
that's where I'd be right.
Back to the
this is more of a debate than any of our other debates.
Well, actually, I think the key thing here is basically how it's going to be portrayed in comparison to the McCain bitch comment. And
I think it's going to be done the same way.
I honestly think that they're going to give her a pardon on this.
I don't think so. I think it's maybe the main media will, but I think you're certainly going to hear the voices come out and say that was uncalled for, that she shouldn't have said that.
We'll be seeing CNN jump on this.
I think you're wrong, sir, and I'm willing to put some money down on this.
You,
I will put $5 down that within the next 2 days at least, we will hear, there will be a story on CNN regarding this.
And if we...
And done in a negative format.
Done in a negative format that would be comparable to the one on McCain.
Yes.
You can watch them side by side.
Watch them side by side.
Okay. All right. Because I just going
We're
by...
We're shaking hands right now, but you can't see it.
going by the media's reaction to some of the other comments made on the current administration...
Mm-hmm.
They don't really seem to have a big problem with public figures of Democrat standing making fun of the Bushes, making fun of the current administration.
You know, well, they don't, and that's okay. But
right.
It doesn't necessarily. I think it's still different because this is Hillary Clinton. Even if it's not the case, not true, that this because of the, even if they do hate the Bushes, I think they're going to be pressured into having to make it a story because of how they did with McCain.
Well, we will have to see that.
We will find out, and we will tell you who wins on our next show.
Yes.
Or in 2 shows from now, because I get 2 days.
Yes, you do. You get 2 days.
I get 2 days. Okay, and that is all we have for why we hate people, and I guess the people we hate are or mean people. Is that basically what we're saying? We don't like people who call people names?
I disrespectful.
Disrespectful people. Okay. News roundup, back to the stories we mentioned at the top of the hour. The EU banning... inefficient cars, and it says the EU, this is from the BBC, Roger Harabin, an environmental analyst.
Yes.
You were a BBC environmental analyst for a few years. What kind of, is it good, bad job?
Not a lot of benefits.
Not okay.
A lot of time off either.
The EU should ban the sale of cars that do under 35 miles to the gallon, the ex-chairman of oil giant Shell says. Coming from a... Shell, that is interesting.
It is. And I guess the key thing here that I think that at least struck me is that the EU's place, and is that even the best thing to do?
Right, and then Sir Mark Moody Stewart told BBC News that the motor industry would adapt to cope with stricter environmental rules. And I think that is true. I think that because it's either adapt or... not be in business.
I don't think that, can we really call that adapting?
No.
Is that some sort of profit blackmail?
Right, and he's right. Nobody needs a car that does 10 to 50 miles per hour. And I think
per gallon.
or per hour. Yeah. And you know that's true, but the market's going to actually decide that. And if I think actually the United States did it right with initially when they had the electric cars first came out, hybrids, and they gave, I think it was a $4,000 tax credit to people who bought that.
Yeah.
And because that, even though the cars were a little bit more money, by getting that tax credit, it lowered it down to normal things, so it became it made sense to do it.
And
I think people are going to act rationally, economically.
And if you look at the United States, they can't make Priuses fast enough.
Yeah, and though, of course, there are problems, of course, with sports cars, and talking about here, it would be illegal to drive an Aston Martin. Unless it did 50 to 60 miles per gallon. Now, what I don't know, and it doesn't say here, it does, I'm sorry, the rule would only apply to new cars. So it might be interesting to see the worth of the old cars really jump up for old sports cars.
Yeah.
Because you would never be able to have something like that again.
And, I'd be interested in seeing the figures of, how much the rich who can afford sports cars that are doing, 15, 20 miles to the gallon...
Mm-hmm.
And how much of an effect they're really making on the environment?
Mm-hmm.
Just the European ones.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to make any effect? Are we going to see any difference?
But it's not just the they're talking about cars. Even they're also saying that they should have stricter standards also for buildings and lighting. And that's of course
my house doesn't get any more than 6 to 8 miles a gallon.
But we are seeing that in the United States. There's whole companies that come to making you green.
Yeah, actually, my father works for one of those companies.
Yeah.
Impact Industrial Services, if you're looking to get any kind of points for the green system, feel free to call them. They're based out of Indianapolis, I think it is. Anyways,
I'm sure that company is a fantastic company, but I think those companies are crooks. And it's not them, it's because of the standards
that
they're working with. Because how it works is you get a certain number of points, and if
yes.
you reach the number of points, you get, a five pinnacle rating? Or
yeah, five stars, five leaves.
But now, spending $1 million to do a water filtration system is worth the same as putting in a $20 bike rack.
Yeah.
It's each worth 1 point. That is so stupid that it's not even
funny. Talk about markets, if you can find a $20 water filtration system that meets the standards, standards, you're more than welcome to buy it.
If we want to make these BS standards, then let's at least make them realistic.
Yeah.
If we want things to be green, then let's make them green. Let's make the real standards and say, and not say these standards have to happen, but make them so that it, cause it's all is up to the company. The companies don't have to follow these standards, but there are some businesses who will only even work with companies that have that.
Yeah.
And that's the market deciding.
Especially in today's, what's the word I'm looking for? Paranoid.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. We know what you're talking about.
in paranoid environmental climate is what I meant to say.
But I'm definitely going to have a talk with your father about that, even though he has absolutely nothing to do with it, and his company is just doing what they're supposed to be doing with how the government set it up. So, but I have to blame someone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And,
but your father could beat me up. So.
Yeah, and he would.
He would. Okay, now, second story is on the FBI. They want data on Americans' physical traits. And it says the FBI, and this is from, don't know where.
I think this was taken
CNN.
Off from CNN.
This is CNN. The FBI is gearing up to create a massive computer database of people's physical characteristics, all part of an effort, the Bureau says, to better identify criminals and terrorists. The FBI wants to use eye scans combined with other data to help identify suspects.
Now, this actually, didn't Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, when you were looking for the suspects, didn't it have, tattoos and eye color and hair color?
But I think this is, someone who's committed a crime, yes, but they're talking, about a general database.
No.
These kind of security things have been coming up a lot, especially since 9/11,
mm-hmm.
where security is the big thing. And I guess the question is it really hurting anyone?
I think, because the argument, if you have nothing to hide, why are you have nothing to fear? And I agree with that to a degree. But again, I've said this several times, there is the slippery slope argument.
But
and
is
I think, is it possible that if I've done nothing wrong, do I have a right to privacy of my eyes look like, of my fingerprints? Do I have that right to privacy?
No, I mean,
I think once I've committed a crime, once I've, not shown I'm not trusted, then I think it's fair game. But until then, what comes first? Are we assumed to be good people, or are we all assumed to be bad people? I think that's the general question. And I guess, how much does safety matter? What are we willing to give up?
I think we're all assumed to be good people until we turn bad.
But then why would we need all that data?
That's true. That's
true. If that's how we look at it, then it's not something that would necessarily be necessary.
The other thing I'm trying to... Is it really a privacy issue?
I think it is. I think my body is private.
But anyone
unless you go on the internet,
right? Unless you go to wedigress.com/newpicsofjeff. But yeah, I think we discussed this. I think, or even mentioned it offhand with the idea of cameras in the streets, and
which I don't have a problem with. That's public streets,
right?
You don't have a right to privacy there.
But
could they start coming, just knocking on my door and saying, "Can I check out your room? Can I see what's on your computer? Just to make sure you're not doing anything bad." Is that then not? Can you say, "Well, they're just making sure you're not doing anything wrong"? Most people would argue that that goes too far. Why doesn't this go too far?
This isn't making sure we're not doing anything wrong. This is, I think the ends are a very well thought out, and I think it's something that I'd love to have. Is basically when there's a crime, they can input a little bit of data and instantly figure out who the hell did it.
What you're talking about is a fascist state that has information on everything, complete control.
Well, no. That goes into the means to get into that end.
Yeah, but eventually, so would you have a problem with, random checks of people's homes for illegal narcotics, illegal guns, anything like that? Would you have a problem with that?
On a government standpoint, yes. Would I personally be upset about it? Not really.
You would not be upset. If this family came in, went through everything on your computer, went through everything in your room, went every IM you've ever sent, anything you've ever...
Other than
wouldn't feel that your privacy was being violated. If you've done nothing wrong. I have no problem with someone on parole being randomly checked onto, again, they would catch a lot of criminals that way.
Oh, absolutely. But, differentiating between what is best for the country and what I care about,
mm-hmm.
I personally, if the Secret Service wants to come in every single day, look through my email inbox, check my computer...
But it's easy to say, because that's not going to happen. It becomes a reality. I don't think you'll be standing so high and pretty and keep saying that. I think it's not going to happen. You don't have to fear. That's so easy to say, I don't care.
No, but honestly, there is nothing on my computer that I feel needs to be hidden from the government.
Sure.
There's nothing on there that there's nothing for them to find on there.
But it's still, it's an invasion of privacy for them to look, unless there's a reason.
Oh, yes, I understand, but what I'm saying is that I personally would not care if they came in, wanted to scan through my hard drive, read my old IM conversations.
I find that very difficult to believe. It's easy for you to say because you're not worried about
this
it.
I
think if it was something that was a real risk, if they actually called you tonight and said, can we do that, I don't think you'd be so happy for it.
This is an open invitation to any...
Because for the one person that's listening, they'll know.
This is an open invitation for any... government agents who want to, you know,
would you let any person who wanted to do it do so?
Any person?
Anybody. If anybody could, is this an open invitation for anyone to go to your house, go through your stuff, go onto your computer?
Well, then we're talking about the government here.
But the government can use, because there's someone who's controlling that. There's someone who gets to make those decisions. You don't know why those decisions are being made. If they have unlimited open power, you don't know what the thought is that goes into it.
We're not talking about unlimited open power. We're talking about a couple of government agents coming in and seeing what I've been saying to my girlfriend online.
Richard, anybody, and they don't have to have a reason to do this, though. So it would lead to abuses. I do not have trust. People running my government are good people who have no ulterior motives.
Absolutely, would lead to abuses. But what I'm back to my original point is that whether it's a good idea, whether it be abused or not. If, and like I said, open invitation. If the government decided that there was some reason they needed to go through my hard drive and figure out what I've been doing. They're more than welcome to.
Okay.
Open invitation.
Moving on. Weird news.
Weird news, yes. This is actually a little strange. We've got a Mrs. Stepney of age of 35 who found that her twins that were inside of her, mm-hmm. you know, through the whole birth process.
Like they were in the uterus?
In utero.
Okay.
Kicked her cancer free. Now,
I have been offering money for that for years. If you have cancer, I'll kick it out of you. I didn't think it ever actually worked.
Yes.
Apparently it does.
What happened is she developed surgical cancer, and her unborn twins' constant kicking in the womb actually managed to dislodge the tumor. And it was only when she was taken to the hospital with a suspected miscarriage that doctors even realized she had cancer. Without that situation, without the babies kicking it free, the cancer may not have been discovered, and it was far too late.
Well, and this came from StrangeNews.com, was it?
No, this is actually off the BBC.
Off the BBC?
Yes.
Really?
This is actually...
Okay.
Which is why, otherwise I wouldn't have believed it.
Yeah.
But, what a story.
That is certainly weird news.
I honestly, there's a part of me that feels bad for Mrs. Stepney, only because she will never be able to hold anything over those kids.
And when they're 16, you're grounded. Well, I say, kicked your tumor out.
You would have cancer right now if it weren't for me.
Yeah. Because as all our parents always, you know, hold it over our heads that they gave birth to us. Well,
exactly.
We can now, you know, they gave us life. Well, we gave you life.
Yeah.
There's, you know, it's going to be that back
and forth.
You got nothing,
Mom. You got nothing. They also have a 5-year-old son named Jack, her and her husband.
Now, has he ever a
Jack
first sort of cancer?
Doesn't seem like Jack's with them that much.
You know, how can you compete with your sibling at that point?
Yeah.
You know,
you're making a soccer team.
Yeah, but, you know, I did this, but they saved Mommy's life.
The kid
is never going to have a normal. He's always going to be living in the shadows of his siblings.
They cured cancer as fetuses with their feet. That is definitely an accomplishment that they're going to be carrying around with them for a long time. That is absolutely fantastic. I'm interested to see if there's any interesting quotes from this article. Something about chemotherapy.
There doesn't really seem to be any interesting quotes there.
They were delivered by cesarean section.
That's not really interesting.
33 weeks into the pregnancy.
That's still not very interesting.
Nope, not
impressed yet.
Nope. Well, I guess that's it for that.
It's interesting, but not much to talk about.
No, but I think it was definitely worth bringing up a little
bit. Yeah, it was
definitely worth bringing up a little bit. No, actually, we're going into our kind of gabbing
section.
Actually,
we should call it gabbing. That just sounds a little too
gay. But I want to bring this up because this is an actual segment. But I read this article and it didn't seem to fit anywhere else. But this guy's my hero for the week. He is my hero this week. Not that that's going to become a regular segment, but this week he is my hero.
Okay.
Whitney Stump didn't like watching drivers ignore the stop signs at the intersection outside of his home. So he asked the city to paint crosswalks there. When the city said no, he made one himself. and the city wasn't appreciative. He's a 27-year-old Ball State University graduate, and he's a father, and he was arrested on July for charge of criminal mischief for creating the crosswalk at the intersection of Dix and North Street. A police officer then warned him after he went back to touch up the paint in August, and the county prosecutor decided to charge him again. Now, this is a man that I can really see myself respecting.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to start this off, just see how you felt about this man taking it into his own hands.
And the thing
civil disobedience a little bit.
Civil disobedience, but at the same time, you know, there was a little bit of criminal mischief there. There was
yep.
a little vandalism, but
yeah.
What did he do? He painted a crosswalk.
Yeah. He did. Apparently.
He did. And, well, you know, I've had interesting experiences with crosswalks in the past.
I believe you're referring to the
yes.
the infamous ticket,
yes.
Where there's actually a warrant
out
for your arrest
in
California,
which is why I can never go back
for illegally crossing the street.
Yes, there's for those of listeners who aren't good friends with us and haven't heard this story, I was given a ticket for jaywalking. That's right. It's not something that just happens on TV and in cartoons. It happens in Ventura, California as well.
Yeah, but it was only like a $50 ticket?
$15
ticket. $15
ticket.
The last time I had seen it ballooned to several thousand, and
yes.
it was being handed over, and you had to appear in court. You didn't appear, and they issued a warrant for you.
That's basically the long and short of it. Yeah, so
I think we should have you be the genius of the week one of these days.
That was a number of weeks ago. But
that's a couple of years ago at this point.
Yeah.
But
it's been a while. I'm sure the statute of limitations has run out on that.
What is the statute of limitations on jaywalking? It's like videotaping on jaywalking, and I'm not talking about the late night segment.
No,
walking illegally across the street. Is that blackmail there for you?
Are you trying to extort $15 out of someone?
I'm just thinking, if I get footage of someone crossing the street, can I take that to the police? And will they charge him and give him a ticket?
Well, that seems like a fun hobby.
That seems like a hell of a hobby.
Hanging around street corners, video people, jaywalking, and bringing it down to the cop.
The ticket's $15. We already throw it away for $10. We do it to 100 people a day.
We've made a couple bucks.
I think 1,000.
About-ish.
1,000-ish. You're 100 people, $10, Steve.
Approximately $1,000. So, I mean, this is definitely a possible career choice for us.
That is. I think, we've been looking for, we've had many jobs.
We have.
And, half of them are real, half of them are fake. But what we're looking for, so maybe a reader or a listener can help us out, a job that pays a lot of money, that requires no skill and very little work.
But something that is so complicated to the outside
world
that we could never be replaced.
Yeah, and I think videotaping people of jaywalking and framing them falls into that area.
It definitely does. It definitely does. Now, would that count as extortion or blackmail?
I think that would. I think when you tell someone that if they don't give you this, you're going to do something to them, I think that's the definition of blackmail. Maybe you can help out. What's the difference between extortion and blackmail? Is extortion like just going in and asking for the money and then they give it to you, or blackmail and you hold something over them? Like threatening is extortion, and if you actually have something, it's blackmail.
Yeah, I think. I have
no idea
what the difference between extortion and blackmail is. But my guess would be extortion is I'm gonna kill you if you don't give me $10.
And blackmail is if you don't give me $10, I'm gonna show you jaywalking.
And it's gonna cost you $15, and it's gonna go to the government.
Yeah.
And they're just gonna use to paint a crosswalk there. And so I think that's actually I want to go back to a gab that we had a little while ago.
Oh, good.
Regarding EctoCooler.
Okay, I think that's
and
important.
I just found this interesting. They don't make it anymore.
That is true.
They stopped making it in last year.
Really? I hadn't seen it at the stores for a while.
Well, they changed it to orange tangerine blast or something like that. But it the thing that I actually found interesting Well, I could show it to the tape, but
it wouldn't really help out too much.
Is that if you look at the packaging before and after they changed the name,
mm-hmm.
they basically took Slimer and replaced it with lips that were the same outline and blob shape
of Slimer.
Yeah,
the Slimer.
Yeah.
Slimer.
They basically replaced Slimer with blobby lips that looked kind of Slimer in silhouette.
Huh. I've never actually pictured Slimer as lips.
No.
But if I tilt my head and, you know, kind of squint an eye.
I wouldn't kick it out of bed for gooing.
Do we have anything interesting to talk about? We've had a boring couple of days.
Yeah, it really has been. We Super Bowls yesterday, we talked about that. Barack Obama thing today, we talked about that.
Because that was actually our top thing. Well, it was our debate, not the top thing. But here, that's something we can... If someone's listening to this and someone has stuck through us for all this time, we need better debate topics.
We really do.
Because here's the problem. It is we agree on 99% of the things, and the things we disagree on are far too complicated for a 10-minute debate.
Or far too simple for a 10-minute.
Yeah, so what we need is something that you would find interesting for, and we don't even necessarily have to disagree with it, just something that you want to hear, you know, point-counterpoint debate on.
Right.
We would love to hear some suggestions because, well, we're not creative people.
No.
We're not intelligent people.
No.
And we're lazy people.
Yes.
So if we can just open up an email and have it right there, that would be fantastic. And what's that email address again, Andrew?
That would be WeDigress, WEDIGRESS, at Gmail, gmail.com.
.com, like, do we...
.com, yeah.
.com, okay.
Yes. I think that's...
That would be good.
That would be good. We're desperate for ideas.
Yeah, yeah, we've got about 4 minutes left.
Some of you may have noticed our recording quality today is back to the original, not as great recording quality.
And that's because I forgot my computer at home.
So we're using a cheap $30 RCA portable recorder that I picked up from Walmart before the Christmas season.
Was it on sale when you got it?
No, it wasn't.
See, had you waited for after Christmas, I bet you could have gone on sale.
That's true, but Walmart does have just such great prices to begin with.
They do, but I think what my parents actually used to do, back when they were young and poor, they would celebrate Christmas a week after because they would get each other presents on sale.
That's actually really neat.
I thought it was a little sad, but I guess neat is a word for it. But
well, actually, did I ever tell you about what myself and the Jewish girl Sarah I dated did?
I remember Sarah. How is she doing?
She's actually doing very well.
She moved, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. She lives
in remember,
Arizona.
One time I was driving over to your house, this was about a year ago, and I think you were in the car with me, and I saw her, pulled down the window and called out to her, say hello, and she completely ignored me. It was rude.
She might not have recognized you.
Well, you were sitting in the car next to me, and I completely stopped pretty much. So she knew you, I'm presuming, since you had dated for about 2 hours.
Closer to four.
What's her name again?
Sarah.
Sarah. And how's Aaron doing?
Aaron's doing very well.
Good.
Aaron, for those of you who care.
Considering that Aaron is probably our only listener.
Yes.
Hey, Aaron, how you
and
doing?
And actually, this is an ultimate test, how much she loves you. She's going to tell you she listened to this podcast. Now, if she did, she's going to know we're talking about her right now, and I want her to tell you about this right here. So, Aaron, if you're listening, you need to call up Andrew and say you hear us talking about you. And we're going to know if you're lying.
We're going to know. We're going to know you're lying.
No, it's going to be real embarrassing for you if you now know she's not listening to it. How are you going to handle that one, Andrew? Never bring it up.
Part of me would like to just call her on it and be a real ass.
So, but just in case she takes it, you know, really offended that we would even try this on her.
Yeah.
This is a little sneak. I apologize for it, Aaron. I shouldn't be putting
it's
you in.
It's all his idea, Aaron. We have nothing to do with this.
We've got 2 minutes left.
We
always do on little, when we go on out, we always say, you know, on the next show what we're going to be discussing, and we always just make this stuff up. And in 2 minutes, I'm going to have to announce those, and I'm looking at this sheet, and it's a blank. And we normally write these out ahead of time, so I'm worried that we're not going to have anything clever to say at the end.
Well, we've really got two options here. We could try to wing it, or we could stop the tape.
Write them. And we're not going to tell you which one we're doing. You're going to have to figure it out. Send your guesses to wedigress@gmail.com. What I'm really saying here is we really want to hear from someone.
We really do.
We're lonely.
We are lonely, lonely men.
Yeah.
And, we mean that in a very manly...
manly way, yes. We do a lot of manly
definitely don't
stuff.
Sit in the corner crying all day.
No, and we're not, you know, going back and forth, you know, wobbling in shame.
No. Definitely not. So we're really grasping at topics here.
We are. Well, we've got 45 seconds left.
Do you want some prepared microscope slides? I got 3 boxes of them.
I don't want any prepared. I think we're going to wing it.
You think so?
I think we should wing it. Can you come up with something in the next 30 seconds and I'll come up with something?
Yeah, actually.
I don't think they're going to be good.
No, no. Well, I've actually...
They're not going to be funny, but they're normally not funny.
Well, you know what?
You know what?
I've actually already come up with three in my head.
Okay, excellent.
So, if you want to come up with something, we can both do them. Or if you just want me to do mine.
Well, start yours. If I can come up with anything, I will join in.
Okay. You want me to do that now?
No, in 15 seconds.
In 15 seconds. Okay,
yes.
Because I just forgot what one of them
because
was.
We have arbitrary numbers that
yeah,
we try to hit.
Absolutely.
I was thinking about doing a play-on with the twins saving the life.
That could be good.
That could be good.
Yeah.
And it's going to be heard in 1, 2, Andrew, take us out.
All right. Tune in next week when we discuss how the EU is banning inefficient bicycles, how Bush
nice
is
one.
Proposing a $3.1 trillion grocery budget,
oh.
and how the FBI wants data on Americans, something. Oh, crap, my phone is ringing. This
you're
is
like, you're Rudy Giuliani in the middle of a speech, taking a phone call. That is all the time we have for... today. We digress. I think Andrew did an excellent job on the fly. Don't bother setting predictions because we told you it was
yeah,
on the fly.
Yeah, that was on the fly.
Join us next week.
Join us next week. Is it next week? Is it
yeah,
be
just
tomorrow?
Join us tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to be tomorrow.
No one's going to join us tomorrow because this isn't going to be up by the time we do the next one because we're so lazy with it.
This has been We Digress with Jeffrey Clues and Andrew Paulo. Tune in our next episode for interesting stories that...
God! Was that Aaron?
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's not. I really hope it didn't get me up when I threw it. Tune in next week. Or next... Tune in next episode. Pause the tune in.